Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I want to begin the show with something that I've been looking at for a little while, and it's information that comes from a guy named J.R. Nyquist. I believe his first name is Jeff, and he works for a kind of a magazine newspaper. It's called Epoch Times, and sometimes you'll see them guys will pop up when you're watching a YouTube or something. And I'm going to read something Mike Adams from his, and this website comes from pandemic.news. Mike Adams recently interviewed J.R. Nyquist. He's called Jeff. And it has to do with China and what's going on in background here, which is quite astonishing if you think about it. So I'll start here. For starters, okay, Trump has just given an executive order to activate 1 million reservists and call them back to active duty. So this is what this starts out with, and I'll just read straight from the website here. It says, ponder for a moment what events are taking place that will require the President of the United States to activate 1 million military reservists. For starters, this executive order obliterates any last shred of the narrative that this is just the flu. So this is not just the flu. No flu has resulted in 1 million soldiers being called to active duty. The real reason for this call-up is that Trump and the Pentagon know the coronavirus is just the opening salvo in a new world war that was initiated by China to crush America and achieve world domination. The 1 million reservists are being activated because the Pentagon expects battlefield casualties on a large scale. This is from Mike Adams, pandemic.news. Because that's what happens when your nation gets invaded by a foreign power. And in case you don't think things were serious enough already, the Pentagon just ordered high-level staffers into a deep underground military bunker in Colorado, something that never happens just because of the flu. So, there's a fellow named J.R. Nyquist who's interviewed by Mike Adams about coronavirus, China, and World War III. Evidently, the Chinese already have, and they've said it publicly. One of their generals, I don't know if it was 10 years ago or whatever, but revealed their doctrine. Their military doctrine is to invade the lower 48 states. Russia has agreed to invade Canada. So this is what's being planned allegedly, and I think it's true. It rings true to me. So you need to listen to J.R. Nyquist because he knows what's about to happen. If Communist China carries out their very plans its military leaders have openly bragged about for decades, America may soon be invaded by Chinese Communist troops, likely aided by UN troops who are seeking to overthrow Trump and occupy America. Anyway, this is a really interesting video. It's out at pandemic.news. You'll have to scroll down a little bit to find it. And then click on the title, Prepare for War, Trump Activates 1 Million Military Reservists as Nation Prepares for Mass Combat Casualties. I know that sounds too over the top to even wrap your mind around. So I'll just let you have a little time to digest this. The day has accelerated in at least my subjective my subjective experience of time has just suddenly accelerated again. And I wanted to talk a little bit about striving. This is the second, what I call the second creational natural law of striving. The first is love. The third is the harmonious thoughts, which we studied in great detail in The Might of Thoughts. And if you're new to the show, the main purpose of this program is to just study and bring forward the teachings of Edward Albert Meyer, the writings. It's called The Teaching of the Spirit. And all of these writings are designed to evolve our consciousness. That's the purpose of your life, the purpose of my life. And there are certain laws that the universe has set up, the universal consciousness. There is an intelligence there, not a heavenly father kind of religious intelligence. It's a universal consciousness. It's really neither good nor evil. It's balanced, neutral, and it has a positive and a negative. It has no gender, no personality. It has a tremendous love, which is the first creational law. Again, there's really no order to these. I just arbitrarily assign numbers to them. Then there's striving, which is the continual working to evolve as a human being. Striving really gives us our sense of life and sense of happiness and sense of satisfaction. So without striving, there is no sense of life, and that's where people fall into addictions. There's a lot of people addicted to drugs right now. This is a very difficult time, too, in many ways. The other thing is the law of harmony. That you should be thinking in a neutral, positive, equalized, balanced way. That means you're not crazy negative, and you're certainly not crazy positive either. Either side of the spectrum is too far. You can be a little bit to the positive, but be careful. Do not think negative thoughts. Do not allow your thoughts to drift on the ocean of life. Steer your thoughts like a captain steers his ship. Nurture your good thoughts. Strengthen your thoughts. Also, there's a creational natural law called system and order. There's an order to things, and as much order as you can put into your life, the better off you are. It's a struggle. We all have to struggle sometimes to try to stick to a schedule. And as much as you can repeat that schedule on a daily basis, it will go good for you that way. But there are going to be things which appear that are going to interrupt your striving. So let me read a little bit from page 104 of The Art zu Leben, The Way to Live. It was thus, and not otherwise, since time immemorial, in all past times, but it is still thus today, and it still will remain, therefore, remain so right into all future times. And as long as there are human beings and living Vaisen at all, every single life form feels, and every single understanding human being recognizes, that the striving itself must be striven for. That striving requires an expenditure of effort and must be achieved through hard work. That striving is not simply dropped into one's lap, and that again and again there are circumstances which work against the striving. Therefore, one's striving cannot be constantly and really gratified because there are multifarious powers that work against the striving. Yeah, I'll just give some silly examples. Every time I go to clean up the garage or clean out my cat's kitty litter, almost for sure one of them will get in the litter box I'm working on, or create a mess somewhere else in the garage. That's an opposition to the striving. Another opposition to the striving might be you're working real hard at work. You're getting, then you'll get a phone call interrupt you. Someone will knock on the door. You're working really hard to try to organize and clean up your house, and then high winds come up and blow shingles off the roof of your garage. These are just things which, some of which I have experienced. So anyway, there's always going to be a power working against the striving. So just when you're making efforts, be aware that there'll be little roadblocks that come up. However, this is not abnormal. Rather, it is truly in accord with the natural law. Because where there is no resistance, there is no effort for the progress. Therefore, it has to be in accord with natural law that an opposite pole is positioned against the striving. So whatever you're striving to achieve, there's going to be something that positions itself against that striving. Based on the teaching of the creational law that there must always be two poles, a plus and a minus, a pro and a con, a negative and a positive, together those two poles always produce one, a oneness and equalizedness. The negative and the positive are two forces that belong together and should never be separated because they depend on one another. This is something, one of the little passages that I've set to my memory. And that's actually from the Might of Thoughts book. This is a creational law-based necessity, which a life form will never succeed in pushing over. But were this to be delusionally attempted, then for the concerned life form, that would mean the end of physical existence. This is pretty important. So if you have a negative in your life, like if you're getting like bad treatment at work, or something of that nature, be very, very careful that you, what I'm trying to say is that there is a balance and there's a certain amount of opposition in life and a certain amount of negativity that you're going to get. And sometimes pushing against that negativity causes more problems than simply being neutral about it. Trying to maintain your neutrality is very important. So this would mean the end of the physical existence, or at least the gravest psychical and consciousness-based harm and other hardship of the evilest form. So sometimes when you're fighting against the thing, the negativity, the unfairness that's interrupting your striving, instead of just being neutral, then you can cause yourself problems by doing that. Therefore, inevitably connected with any striving are negative influence and machinations of evil form, which are so inseparably one with each other as fire and heat. Like you can't separate the fire from the heat or the heat from the fire. You're going to get burned. So, and I've experienced that before. Let me tell you that, so don't do it. Put another way, this also means that no success can be attained without negative aspects being involved, which tag along during the development towards the success. Therefore, errors must inevitably be made so that they can be recognized and resolved, whereby only then can an error-free success finally crystallize, without adverse effects and side effects, as well as secondary influences and so forth. There is no productive and evolutive striving. Where there is a life and striving, there is truthly life and truthly evolution. Striving is the impetus of the life. Striving is the diligent impulse of the evolution of creation's drive. So we have, the Meyer information teaches that there is something called the creation, which is basically our universe. There's an intelligence behind it. It's 46 trillion years old, much older than what our scientists think, because we do not know about fine matter. There's something called coarse material, like this desk is made out of. It's hard. Your physical body is coarse material. There's also something called fine material, which we know about energy, which I think is close to fine matter. But the what happens is the coarse material in our universe only lasts about 15 or 20, or maybe it's even 40 billion years. It's in the billions. But the fine matter still remains. So our universe, if you look at beyond just the coarse material, it's 46 trillion years old. And there was a parallel universe created when our universe was created. And it's called the Tao universe, and it's also 46 trillion years old. And there's certain creational laws associated with a universe. And one is that, for example, our universe will expand for 152.52 trillion years, I believe it is. It's in its expansion phase. And during that phase, it's creating spirit forms and planets and galaxies and solar systems and plants and animals on some of those planets. And the, for example, the Meyer material says something like, there's something like in the Milky Way galaxy, close to 7 million solar systems that can support life, and about 2.6 of those million, or 2.6 million that have higher life like human beings. So Billy's contacts are very evolved. They are at the stage where they are at the point where they almost don't need a physical body anymore. And our solar, our universe is, it has seven counter-rotating rings, the creation does. And they counter-rotate against one another. And the fourth belt is where all the coarse material is. Remember, I was talking about coarse material. Everything else is fine matter or something besides coarse material. And within the material belt of our universe are seven different space-time configurations. And these are like dimensions, which I, that word is so difficult and so abused, and I don't like it, but it's about the only thing we got. And that deals with time as well. So the Pleiaran people that Billy has had contact with are from a different space-time configuration. Now, hopefully I can find this. I just had a thought that you might find interesting. Figures. Wait a minute. No, I'm being negative here. There's a group called the Hyperboreans, and I don't know if they're still on the Earth or not. But for a while they were here, and for quite a while they were here. And this is an extraterrestrial group that lived, that had a city far below Mount Shasta. Now, Mount Shasta is in Northern California. Let me read this. This is Contact Report 39. And Mount Shasta is an old volcanic mountain with a particularly still unexplored area in America, or more precisely Northern California. The mountain is very rocky and extremely difficult to climb. In the interior of the mountain itself is a small city, which is inhabited by descendants of extraterrestrials, and which here and there also receives a visit from their space brothers from outer space. So in this mountain is a city of people that are called Hyperboreans. They are blonde people, blonde curly hair, and they sometimes get visitors, And there's these circular golden spheres that I believe enter, that appear to go right into the mountain. Let me continue here. It says, the entrance to the very deeply underground city is well camouflaged under the eastern mountain peak. And it is impossible for Earth humans to begin to find it. But if Earth human beings are ever found in the proximity, then they are made imperceptibly unable to move or distracted by beam weapons that most of the city dwellers carry on themselves for security reasons. So they'll stun you with some beam weapon or something if you get too close, and then they probably take you away and put you somewhere where you can recover. And anyway, their golden spaceships are of a spherical form, for they master spaceflight and can sometimes be seen when they don't protect these from view. The human beings of this race are very well proportioned in their appearance, and I believe another contact report that explains that they've been here for hundreds of thousands of years. Now, this group, is it still here? I'm not sure. I know we had like a mass exodus right around 1995 for whatever reason. Anyway, their hair is mostly natural blonde, long and curly, which is very fit for their graceful Hyperborean nature. Sometimes, despite their shyness of Earth human beings, in other words, they don't like to be around us very much. They probably have sensitivity to our thought vibrations, which are probably extremely unhealthy to them by reading other contact reports. I know the Pleiarian, they have to wear a special device that shields them, and that device will only work for about 30 minutes. And Semyase, Billy's third contact, ran into a great problem. As you know, the story where Jacobus walked into the room when Billy was talking to her. And she fell and hit her head and managed to beam herself back to her ship. But now she's been recovering from that incident, which occurred back in the 70s or 80s. So, anyway. Sometimes, despite their shyness of Earth human beings, they go into the villages to conduct unrecognized bartering with them, after which they depart and flee in great hurry, however, if Earth human beings come too close to them. But Mount Shasta isn't the only place where this race lives, for already I'm very early times, they divided themselves into three smaller peoples, with the other two living unrecognized and deep underground in the Aleutian Islands and in Alaska. The whole population amounts to about 700 human beings. And there is still a link, and I think it still works, so I'll click it. And it goes to rents.com, and it has a photograph one of these amazing, like, golden circular ships. They're just beautiful. And what can I say? That's amazing. Billy says, this is fantastically interesting. And now a few things dawn on me. But you've just said something about their appearance from which I could infer that this race living underground, it concerns very distant descendants of real Hyperboreans. You infer correctly, and Billy's speaking with Semyase at this point. So this was before the great accident I was telling you about. Billy says, man, that's incredible. Then these would indeed be the descendants or distant descendants of those who 180,000 or 190,000 years ago carried out the actual decolonization in the form that can be regarded then as early history of the current human race, at least for the white race. Among them, then, must have been the J.H.W.H., the King of Wisdom, the Ishwish, who gave Henoch his great wisdom, which would be one of the earlier, one of the foregangers of Edward Albert Meyer, the predecessors. Methuselah went to this one in a later incarnation of Henoch, and Noah was later commissioned by this one's guardian angels to build the ark, with which he actually landed down Ararat. Sannyasi says, except that the event with the building of the ark, which Noah himself did not build, and with his family, and with the animals and everything else, because became so falsified, so the story has been falsified, that no current information agrees with the truth anymore. So I guess Noah didn't actually build the ark. And the events with the ark truly did not take place, but at a later time, 90,000 years later. This is interesting. And Billy says, oh, I know that very well. And in that these falsified assertions, the boundless stupidity and lack of education of the scribes, inevitably comes to full expression. For how else could they have written in their fantasy story that Ararat is the highest mountain in the world? And on the other hand, how, for example, could elephants, as well as mammoths, which were still there at the time, rhinoceroses and other four-legged animals, have climbed down from Ararat? I happen to know that I know the mountain very well, and know that even a good mountain climber has a lot of distress and trouble when wanting to conquer the mountain. So evidently, it's quite a difficult mountain to climb. And this is Contact Report 39 from the Future of Mankind site. So if you want to have some good reading, it's very big though. It has a lot of other information. Anyway, that's probably enough of that. But Billy has had contacts. He started in 1943 when he was contacted by Foth, his first mentor, and was with him for about 11 years, and then Asket, his second mentor, he was mentored by for about 11 years, another 11 years, then he had 11 years of the normal life, and then Sannyasi came into the picture, the woman from was one of the Pleiaren. So Billy has had multiple extraterrestrial mentors over the year. Asket was from the Tao universe, and Sfoth was the father of Ta, and I guess Ta would have been the grandfather of Sannyasi. So this group is, and part of this group is related to each other, and also connected with Billy from Billy's previous lives. Now, one of the previous lives of Billy is a guy named Nocodemian, who was quite a teacher in ancient times and was well known, let's say that, in other galaxies and things like that. For some reason, I did not get the warning that my stream was almost over. And I'm not sure why, but I've got like 40 seconds left. Hopefully, we've been recording during this time. Anyway, you've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we'll just try to keep bringing these regular shows to you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.